open the Library Joint Powers Authority Board meeting of Monday, September 12, 2011. And I'm happy to say it's here in our beautiful New Scotts Valley branch. This is a great meeting room. We were just in a closed session to discuss labor negotiations, library staffing and transition update, as well as a liability claim, and we gave direction to our director for our labor negotiations and personnel issues, and we gave direction to our director to approve the claim, the liability claim. So let's move on to the public meeting. Helga, can you call the roll?
Supervisor Peary?
Here.
Citizen Bird?
Here. Sure.
Citizen Orson?
Here.
Councilmember Byers?
Here.
Citizen Portinger?
Here.
Councilmember Reed?
Here.
Councilmember Terrazas?
Here.
Supervisor Stone?
Here.
Councilmember Story?
Here.
Thank you. We have an agenda in front of us.
I wanted to pull D on the consent agenda so we could discuss that a little bit.
Consent agenda D is approval of hours. Okay. So we'll move that. We will move 9D to the end of the agenda after other business. So we had, Ellen, you had a motion to approve, and you seconded
it. I did.
And Sam seconded as amended. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, and we have minutes from our last meeting, which was July 11th.
Move to approve.
Second.
Okay. David moved to approve, and Lee seconded. I'm repeating this because it's hard to hear sometimes for the clerk, and the tape doesn't always come through clearly, so I'm trying to help out by repeating that. And sometimes I can't hear anything. So we do have a motion and a second for the minutes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. And we have a proclamation of Big Read Month. So I'm going to read this proclamation. It's the proclamation of the Santa Cruz Library Joint Powers Authority Board proclaiming October 2nd through November 5th, 2011 as Big Read Month. Whereas Big Read is an initiative of the National Endowment for the Arts designed to restore reading to the center of American culture and encourage reading for pleasure and enlightenment, and whereas the NEA presents the Big Read in partnership with the Institute of Museum and Library Services and in partnership with Arts Midwest, and whereas what began as a pilot project in 2006 with 10 communities, Big Read has since expanded to include 951 grants as of June 2010, and now brings together partners across the country to participate in this important program. And whereas locally, the Friends of the Library, in partnership with the Santa Cruz Public Libraries, received a Big Read grant for the works of author Edgar Allan Poe. And whereas from October 1 through November 5, the goal is to have the entire Santa Cruz community reading, viewing, and listening and talking about the works of Poe. And whereas to encourage broad participation in the local Big Read event, staff at the Santa Cruz Public Library, volunteers with the Friends of the Library, local school districts, the Museum of Art and History, community TV, and local businesses and groups will host a number of events highlighting the work and life of Poe, whereas events and activities will include book discussion groups, reading Poe, mystery author events, a Condor education program, no ravens, just condors, Condor education program, and will culminate with a grand finale event on November 3rd at the Seymour Center, where Poe impersonator Duffy Hudson and author Lori King will be the featured guests. Now, therefore, I, Barbara Gorson, chairperson of the Library Joint Powers Board, hereby proclaim October 2nd through November 5th, 2011, as the Big Read Month in all the Santa Cruz public libraries, and encourage residents to participate in the many events focusing on the incredible life and work of Edgar Allan Poe. And I, for one, am really happy that Poe was chosen because I really want to reread some of his work. And you'll all be happy to, my husband is not in the audience tonight because he will recite The Raven at the drop of a hat. The mention of Poe, and he's reciting The Raven. And just when you think he can't possibly know the next verse, he knows all the verses.
So I'd like to point out the website came up today. Thank you to Studio Holiday for putting that up for whoever did it for. Great.
Sounds fun.
So I encourage you to go there, santacruzreads.org, and click on everything. And here's the posters. These are prototypes. Those aren't final ones. And anyway, it's very exciting, all the events that are happening.
And the designer is in the audience, I understand. Right there.
He's going to be presenting to us later. So.
Okay, great.
And I'm Ted Holliday from Studio Holliday, a
great
design and branding firm.
Thank you, Ted. We'll talk with you later. All right. Now's the time for oral communications, which are brief comments, not to exceed 3 minutes, on topics which are not on the agenda. So do we have any oral communications? Yes. Can you step up and just stand up and tell us your name?
Yeah. My name is Joanne James, and I'd like to tell you that my spouse, Karen James, is facing a potential layoff from her job as a full-time library clerk. She's been offered a 20-hour week position instead. We've been married 22 years, and for the past 14, I've been grateful to have medical coverage through her benefit plan. I live with chronic disabling illness and will lose my current health care coverage effective January 1st. I would like you to know how this transitional plan is affecting us. We have lived in Santa Cruz for 30 years and have deep roots here. We are now looking at the possibility of having to leave here in order to survive if Karen's income is cut in half. There will be two of us living at $1,000 a month. What makes me most angry is her seniority and years of excellent evaluations meant nothing at all. She was given more and more responsibility over the years. She actually started working in 89 and worked till 93 and took 1 year off because we don't have family and I had cancer. So she's been with the library actually since 89. Her full-time position now is a 14-year position. For all her efforts, she's received no pay increase for 5 years, a furlough the past three, and now a layoff with a generous offer of a half-time position and no benefit, a loss of benefits. She has to pay into half it for herself. When I contacted every one of you on this board with my concerns about the volunteers, I received calls back promptly from the chair and the vice chair. David Terrazas called me to acknowledge he received my message, but didn't engage with any conversation. Mark Stone's assistant called me the next day to say he wasn't available for comment, and that was it. I would have appreciated a response from every one of you, including the director. You need to know how your decisions are impacting real people in this community and the future of library service. And I'm not talking about appeasing constituents who complain about being inconvenienced by branch closures. Let me be clear, I mean issues like having food to eat and a roof over our heads. I mean health care and being able to afford medicine. The proposed transitional plan impacts these very issues. I only regret that more people don't realize they have the right to stand up and be heard. And because this was moved up to Scotts Valley, there's a lot of people that couldn't make it up here. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments? Okay. Written communications, any questions or comments on those? Let's move on to reports of advisory bodies. Friends?
Library Friends,
okay.
Michelle Mosier, Consultant Library Friends, and I just wanted to say that the summer children's programs, Felt Library Friends decided to fund 5 additional ones besides the 2 that were provided by the library, and they were very successful, And the other thing Felt Library Friends has done in our library is the work with Janice to institute the Tales to Tales program, the Read to a Dog. And that just started last month, and it's been quite wonderful to see a child sitting there reading to this attentive dog. So that program is being kicked off, and it's going really well, thanks to our volunteers.
Thank you. Finance Committee, we have the draft minutes in the report. Real briefly, we reviewed the year-end, which the board will be talking about in a later agenda item. The Finance Committee recommended allocating money to cover the emergency building maintenance needs, which we'll also be talking about later. And we discussed the financial part of the performance indicators and gave some information and direction to Teresa on that. And so that's it for Financial Committee. Member reports, anything new, Sam from Capitola?
Nothing new on the design study and the architectural work. We did, at the last council meeting last Thursday, September 8th, make the election to make the voluntary payments to the state under the RDA proposal. There were two options, either allow RDA to be eliminated or to make a voluntary payment and to be able to keep a portion of the funds. We elected to do the voluntary payment, and that's significant for the library because it means that we will be able to continue to fund from the balance of the RDA the annual payments for the new facilities scheduled for 2017. We still have the issue that those funds aren't sufficient to fund the size of library that the design study and the architects are recommending. So we still have that barrier in front of us. So that's my update.
Thank you. And next we have the consent agenda, which includes everything except D.
Move approval.
Second.
Ellen moved approval and David seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, let's move down to staff reports.
Okay, I'm in the right place. We skip so much on the agenda. year-end financial will be page 50. I did notice a major typo in a lot of reports under the summary. The last line should just be crossed out. Well, we did really well, much to our surprise. And I have asked Jack to come tonight just in case there were questions about it. I think the report pretty much runs through it. We ended up with about a little over $800,000 that to the good, of about $500,000 was unexpected revenues, even greater than the estimates. I think the final estimates were about $200,000 or $300,000 more in sales tax, and we ended up about $500,000 more in revenue than anticipated. I got something from Jack today that talked about sales tax in general. Sales tax receipts for the second quarter ended June 2011. Cash receipts for the city were up 4.59%, while for the county they were up 8.79%. So statewide it was 10.13%. But anyway, I'll take anything positive. So I mean that's good news. So there's several areas where we saved because we froze positions that became available, and yes, we had to backfill with other people, but we didn't always fill every single hour, so we saved quite a bit of money there. There were just things that were, staff was careful in expenditures. Some things were contingencies we didn't need, or kind of explain some of the electricity was $17,000 under budget. I thought it was a cold year, but maybe not. It was cold summer, I guess, and that's a new fiscal year. So, so anyway, we at our June meeting, we had in setting fund balance, the new fund balance policy that we had to set, we agreed that anything over $100,000 would be placed in the fund balance for cash and first $100,000 would be available for the regular operating budget to offset uncertainties created by the new staffing model, staffing plan and service model, because we're just not really sure how it's all going to play out. So that's the basic report on, we did well. So if there's
any questions or comments?
There's really no action needed. It's just giving you the information, because we already made the decision what to do with the money, unless you want to change that. If they want to change that, I don't know what they have to do.
I have a question. Would the increases, anything that's attributed to the sale, increase purchases, or what? Where is that increases? Where is it primarily coming from?
Well, the information I received today had no detail to it, and I shared with Teresa, and she's sharing with you. The detail, at least for the city, comes later. So we get told how much cash affects each quarter, but then we get the detail several weeks later, so I don't have a feel for that. But it's encouraging. Of course, we're in a very tough economic situation, so I'm not certain that's going to continue, but certainly we did well for this quarter.
I've also provided the annual workers' compensation data, which is not out of the ordinary. It's doing fine. Just for your information, Santa Cruz County single-family housing sales history, just to kind of see what's been going on. Information about the state budget. I thought, if we're lucky, we'll get $16,000. So not going to count on it.
It's not $600,000.
And I also gave you a copy of the CAO. First time I've gotten this from the county. I don't think I've gotten it before, but the proposed budget showing the county library fund, so I threw it in here. And I was asked some questions. I did get a call with some questions about it. So I actually do have, if you want to take one of each, it is a...
Those were my questions, I think. I asked Teresa... if she knew what the admin expenses were for. So she got an answer. Okay.
There should be an extra one. Anyway, Barbara did ask about the four items, so here's the explanation for them. And number three, the property insurance for the county-owned libraries, they are researching the Ben Lomond and Soquel, what that's there for. And apparently Live Oak is currently being charged to the RDA, but needs to get charged to the financial authority. So that I just... about that today, so I haven't heard it. Any other questions on this?
No, I was just curious to see what's insurance for and what's the debt payment for.
And I did talk to the city risk manager, the city of Santa Cruz, and apparently the JPA agreement requires each government entity to have property insurance. So Scotts Valley carries it for this building. We insure the contents, but we insure the building itself. And so the county insures the buildings that it owns. And I'm assuming, this is also in the question that's pending, LaSalle Beach and Felton are both rented, so I'm assuming the landlord is carrying that. But it said county-owned building, so those aren't owned by the county, so I'm assuming those are carried by the landlord. But I don't understand Ben Lomond and Soquel unless some agreement was made when those became volunteer libraries that the library fund would continue to pay property insurance. I don't know. So they're researching that. The county is researching. I wasn't around. Okay. July financials. It's always fun the beginning of the year. There really isn't much to say. Everything's okay. Things that are highly... They don't have much balance. It's because we've encumbered it ahead of time. beginning of the year, or it's a payment outright for insurance or something. So once again, our pool cash was doing pretty well, $911,000 in July. So we're off the hook for the city. I think we've recovered.
Any questions on July financials?
Yeah.
I have on page 2 on the revenue side, there's a line miscellaneous non-operating revenue. Looks like we received $18,900, which was unscheduled. Page 2 on the bottom right, or excuse me, it's at page 75 in the packet.
My guess is it's a carryover. That's probably the grant carryover for the Presto grant. It's about the right dollar amount.
Okay. So the carryover would reflect as current year revenue. So.
Mm-hmm. I'll double check it, but I'm pretty sure that's right.
So if the carryover, just trying to understand this. So if the carryover, I understand the grant and that we didn't finish using up all the funds, so it carried over. So if that's what this is, where did the other carryovers show up? Like the expenses that we had, it's not quite the same thing, but we had allocated for the ILS that weren't used in our last fiscal year. Does that show up in these somewhere?
It's not actually revenue, though.
I know.
Should show up in the expenditure budget adjusted estimate as additional budget authority. So on top of the adopted budget would be the amounts for carryover projects.
Okay. That makes sense. Nancy?
I actually had a question, too. I just couldn't remember. What is the library private trust fund again? Library private trust fund. It's on 75. The private trust fund.
That looks to me like Richardson. Richardson Trust.
I know there is one trust that shows up there.
You know, it would be helpful if it just had that in parentheses, because
you can't do it.
Okay. All right.
Might be able to change the title of our system. So
yeah, if it's just that one trust fund, then it kind of threw me off. I thought, oh, maybe there's a big private trust fund that would get more out of.
Other questions?
I'd like to invite Ted Holliday, who helped us. We got a grant from the Community Foundation last year for $12,000 to develop a marketing plan for the library. And as part of that was the development of a logo and a new brand. And we solicited designs from several firms, and we selected Studio Holliday. And I invited Ted Holliday from that firm to come today and give you the background on how we developed the logo and what it means, and to kind of present it to you officially. We've started using it in some places. You've probably seen it on the front door. You noticed it was on the room we met in for closed session. Those are a couple of ways that it's been used, and I'm going to let Ted go for it because I want to steal this thing.
Yeah, cool. Thank you. So, question, can I pull up a URL here?
Gail.
Possible?
Sure.
Here, you know what? I'm just going to hand you my phone. So I want everybody to see it because it's important while I'm talking about it. See it, and I want to take time. So I have to say, I'm so stoked to be a part of the library, a part of this community, and helping everybody that's involved in the library. We love Santa Cruz. Studio Holiday loves Santa Cruz. We love everything about it. So I actually grab my notes because I'm going to forget things if I don't. So we're a local design studio. We do branding for multiple companies. We have done branding for Plantronics, Santa Cruz Design and Innovation Center, for Santa Cruz Next. So tons of local companies. Betty Burgers. We've done a lot of different branding locally, as well as work with Microsoft and other high-tech firms in the Bay Area and on the East Coast. So, Love Nelson, the Ma, as well, I have to mention those. In fact, the Ma has a new banner that we just redesigned that's going to go up this week, and it's massive. It's like 4 feet by, like, 4 feet. So, in regards to, I'm just waiting for the logo to pop up here. You can kind of see it there. It's really small and being blocked. Yeah, maybe click, there you go. Yay, we can see it now. Okay, so in regards to branding, I want to put the notebook down now. So I love branding. It is my forte. It really is. I think this logo is totally different than anything the library has ever had, right? So what it is, if you look at it, the shape there, the orange shape, it is a stylized talk bubble, right? So there are conversations going on around the library. There's conversations going on around Santa Cruz. And imagine there are other smaller talk bubbles around this, right? Imagine it's on the side of your truck, right? On the side of a building. And there's other talk bubbles. There's conversations going on. There's social media that I know that you're involved with. And it has that feel to it, and that's basically the general gist of why we created this talk bubble shape. But beyond that, if you look at it, it is kind of a book, a page, curled up, turning over, right? So it has kind of double meaning there. In fact, there's lots of animation ideas that we have. So I don't want to, like, belabor the idea. I love this brand. It has legs. And what I mean by legs is there's patterns that we create, and you can see those on the windows in the meeting rooms over here. I love it. It has a color palette. It has patterns to it. It's a great brand already. And based on this logo, the brand is going to be even stronger. So.
Passing out now is the middle ordering library cards in about six different colors.
Mm-hmm.
This is just one, and the barcodes on these don't work. Which is,
now this is a sample.
This was a sample.
The numbers are pretty large.
Yeah. So it's just kind of an idea. And then business cards, you can see how we've changed business cards. And you saw it on the front door and in the conference room, study room. We've done it on the glass and seen it also in a pattern, and we're just real excited about starting to use this. And we have a whole brand book that we have specific colors, and we've got the numbers. These didn't come out really well, it's not the copier, but these are the colors we'll be using. We have instructions of how to use it and how not to use it.
In regards to the brand style guidelines, I am an anal retentive stickler for guides. And so we have a color palette. You have to stick to that. And I'm talking to you. You have to stick to that. We have font guidelines. We have pattern guidelines. And as we develop other materials, signage, print pieces, and hopefully website, as we move forward with all of that, the brand guidelines will grow and develop and be really specific, so that Santa Cruz Public Libraries has a really strong brand that doesn't deviate and doesn't follow others and is setting the standard, and I think we can do that here.
I just, since you're sort of telling us all about this logo, the P is open at the bottom.
Yes.
And so is that, was that, what's your thought around that, how it's, you know what I'm saying? I mean.
Yes, no, I do. there's no real explanation for it other than I like how it, the P and L line up with public libraries. Right, and the fact that it is offset, it's not centered inside there. From a designer standpoint, if you just put something smack dab in the middle, like if I take a photo of you right now, I'm a photographer, right? If I take a photo of you, I wouldn't put you right in the middle. I would offset you in the frame, right? So it's a similar philosophy.
And we can also add a specific branch, like you'll see it's done here with Scotts Valley or whatever branch it might be.
Lee, I was just curious, is this going to flow into signage within the branches as well? You know, like telling what, you know, where certain sections are, that kind of stuff, or is it more sort of external and
eventually it does, as we do that?
I was just curious if that was part of
the plan. Can I talk about that really quick? One of the things I would love to see if you have the budget for it, imagine this is a bookshelf, right, and this is graphic novels. I'm looking at that one right there. Imagine there is that shape, and you know, something like this, right? That shape up here, cut out, basically pointing down to the graphic novels. And it said that, it said the section, you know, or it said the name of it, whatever it might be, right? I would love that. I would love to see that pointing down to, basically saying, hey, here's where the conversation about graphic novels is. Level.
Wasn't ready in time for that.
That takes money, though. So.
It's nice to know the possibilities there.
Yes. We've thought about a lot of that stuff.
Sam.
Well, I was just wondering. I know nothing about designs and graphics and branding, and so I would just want to venture an opinion about it. But has this been tested among staff and patrons and to see? Because I believe, I mean, branding is a certain sense of what kind of feeling it elicits from people who first encounter it or on multiple encounters. And so have we tested this so that we get a sense of what that testing resulted from users? And
we didn't staff? Have time because of the grant, but we did involve in the selection process how would you describe her, somebody from Redevelopment Agency, Crystal.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
Crystal
yeah.
Works.
It's our arts
program manager.
Art program manager. And so we wanted somebody non-library to kind of, you know, who's done this kind of work before. She's in charge of the sign program, I believe, for redevelopment. So she came and we got her input, and she was very supportive of it. We had to have the grant expended by a certain time and had to move really quickly on it.
Did staff have input as well?
Not a lot of staff, no. Like I said, there was no time. And choosing a logo by committee is a nightmare.
I can attest to that.
You'll get as many different opinions as there are committee members. So we looked at Janice and Crystal, maybe she was in on it, I looked at, mm-hmm. I don't know, I think you started with four, and we narrowed it, and then kept narrowing it and changing it, and it morphed, and then we finally...
Yeah, and there was four or five people on my staff who worked on it, who evaluated it and had input, and you know, I've been a designer for 26-something years now, and other staff, you know, 5-10 years and whatnot, and so between all of us, as Teresa said, when you do design evaluation by committee, it rarely happens as it's supposed to happen, right? So I actually applaud, I have to say, I applaud Teresa and Janice for the way the process went, because it's a great logo, and I'm not talking about the work we did, I'm talking about what I see up there. is a great logo that has great potential, and it's going to go places, and people will eventually, right, after they see it and warm up to it, are eventually going to love it, whether they don't like it or not. At the start, so.
We saw pictures of how it would look on a like on the courier van, mm-hmm. or on the bookmobile. It was so cool. It dances.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment. This is the first time we've had a kind of discussion about kind of how we communicate with the public. You know, here in the logo we had earlier, the proclamation that was designed, kind of announcing a program, you know, reading groups going to be done. And I really think it's important that we do more of this, and I'd like to see, you know, maybe discussion with staff on opportunities, because I could see this also targeting youth in different ways. Mm-hmm. The tagline that's listed on these cards that I think people don't have in front of them is connect, inspire, and inform. And I think that's also equally important in terms of the many purposes a library has in our community. And the logo itself I like because I think it's fresh and it kind of provides, I think, a different connection with the public. But I also feel it's important that there may be certain parts of our community that need to be spoken to and heard, you know, how we do that. And I'd love to hear at future board meetings at least some more of that conversation as far as what we're doing to reach out to different groups, such as this proclamation and the community reach program. So I thank you for putting this on the agenda. I look forward to having more discussions with regards to kind of marketing and how we proceed.
I have a question. You mentioned marketing plan. When our agendas aren't quite as full as they will be for the next couple of months, can you bring that marketing plan in to the board and give us information about that? I would be interested in that. And also, I just want to say I love the concept of this design. So I don't know who came up with that, but whoever did. I really, really like the fact that it talks about the fact that the library is not a one-way action. It's not librarians giving information to someone or someone just taking a book out. It really, to me, it really refocuses our understanding that the library is a place for two-way interaction and two-way conversation. So I really, really like the concept of this.
I just want to say I really like it as well. I think it's simple, it's fresh, it's scalable, and I think there's a lot that we can do with it. So I'm all in favor of it.
Any other comments?
Well, I have another question.
Yes, yeah.
I mean, the samples that were passed around, mm-hmm. this is going to be the library card, and this is how it's going to be, because all this here is the design, not the name.
On the back side?
Yeah, I know. I see it's just the names on the back side, but it's not that logo.
Yeah. Right, okay. The logo actually has, we have, and you're not seeing all of them here, there are, I believe, two versions of the logo, to where it's stacked horizontally and another version where it's stacked vertically, right? And so, with the type I'm talking about. And so, on the back side of the actual library card is more pattern-focused, right? So that is a part of the brand as well, right? The back of the card. The front of the card, where you see that your name and where you see the actual name of the library, right? That's where the name comes out. So yes, the name and the logo mark can be separated, in my opinion, as long as they're together, because one's on the front and one's on the back.
So will the person's name go on this side? Is that what we're saying? Or on this side?
Well,
will there be an individual's name on there?
They sign it on the side you're looking at, the white side.
That one, okay.
Right. So
it
doesn't actually print their name, they just sign their name, right?
Yeah. The whole bag is writable. So people who like to make symbols and whatever they want, they can write anywhere on either one of those colors.
And just to add, I believe we're doing multiple colored versions, right? So if I like orange or if I like green, I can pick my card color, the back color, right? Based on how I feel about the library, right? So I can pick whatever color I want.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Ted.
Oh, thank you. I love the library. I love the project. So
the whole
studio desk.
And they've been great on other projects that have come, like the Big Read and other things that they've done for us. It's been a wonderful relationship. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, so let's move on.
Stay too long.
Okay, thank you. I might.
You can sneak out. That would be the time. Facilities master plan discussion.
Okay, I was supposed to bring back to you a plan for doing the facilities master plan. We have money in the budget this year to conduct a facilities master plan, and I talked with several architects about how to approach this. And the recommendation is that we actually don't call it a facilities master plan as much as a facilities improvement and funding options plan. Most facilities master plans start with a community needs focus. You know, what are the community needs for? And we've kind of done that a lot with the strategic plan, with the task force on alternative service models. Scott Valley did a specific needs assessment for this building. Capitola did one for their prospective new building. So we really feel that we have a pretty good sense of what the community wants. And each building is very different in terms of what it needs. We have a building like this building, which really doesn't need much right now, and so any improvement plan would probably put it at the very end, and I don't even know what we'll put on it, but come up with something. To facilities that we know need to be built, you know, felt in, we know that the downtown library is inadequate, we know Aptos is inadequate. So there's other branches, maybe Branch of 40 needs just a makeover, maybe some rearranging, and you know, maybe creating a meeting room space, maybe rearranging some things, doing some things differently. So the idea would be to take each branch and in the RFP list each one page per branch listing what we see as the particular needs based on the service model and its physical condition, and then ask for kind of a high level analysis of each branch in the time frame of 5 to 15 years. And the reason I say 15 is because this building in 15 years, let's expand it. But you know, obviously that's not going to happen right away. So I mean, that's why such a long span on it. We probably don't have enough money for engineering or specific design. And when you're looking at 10 locations, that's a lot to analyze. But we could ask them to give us recommendations for non-structural makeovers as temporary measures for some places. We have some money for the downtown library, not enough to rebuild it, but maybe enough to make some interim changes. Some more permanent solutions for facilities that need to be replaced, like or added on to Felton downtown. When I wrote this, I didn't think Capitola was going to have redevelopment funds, so but it might be part of that, you know, part of that too, in helping in Aptos. It's kind of a ballpark estimate of how much money we're looking at for both temporary and permanent solutions. And then it was recommended that we ask the consultant to assess possible funding options and sources. Bonds, parcel taxes, Mellow Roofs, whatever it might be, whatever the options are, for someone to look at the different ones, and they might be different for each branch or by branch. So to kind of give us an assessment of that aspect, and then maybe how can we phase or sequence the projects. So that's what's kind of in my mind of how to proceed with issuing, I haven't created an RFP yet. I was told you wanted to hear about it at this meeting. And if you think that this approach might work, then I would, from this, develop an RFP to lay it all out.
Catherine?
You see, well, I think you started out by saying architects, library architects, library people, or this?
I talked to two architects that do libraries. Oh, just that would be the contacts that I have. But, that's who typically does master plans.
There are a couple in California or West?
Oh, they're all in California. Yeah. And I put something out on the listserv to other libraries saying, do you have an RFP for a master plan that I can look at? Of course, I heard from all my colleagues, and I have a pile this high. But then I also heard from all the architects say, please add me to your list. Please add me to your list. So I have quite a list of those.
I think it's a skill to do chemicals or whatever it is, you know, so I, a little bit of that skill need to be involved.
My guess is we'll hear from library architects. I mean, we had, it was 6 or 7 finalists for
out of 55.
Yeah.
So there's
I know the architects for libraries have to be library, but.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably, I mean, that's who I've heard from so far. I mean, they're the ones lurking on the California library listserv. So.
That's how we save on our utilities.
Still working out the lights here.
Ellen.
I like the idea of doing this and moving forward on it. My only concern came up when you were talking about there really are two very different parts of this. One is, and they take really different skills. One is, you know, the analysis of the physical plant and what does it need and what can we do and sort of, and then you also sort of add on the funding thing. And I think those are probably so different that they might need to be split apart. I think you're unlikely to find a designer or architect or something who really has serious skills in the neighborhood of how we're going to pay for this.
You're right, and what was suggested is that the architect would have a sub. But
yeah,
if you don't want to do it that way, we could issue them separately. The problem is going to be the money. Whether, you know, doing them totally separately, how much do we hold out for the other one? But we can see what it would cost from the for
the
architect
piece
once that's done.
Yeah. Doing the architect and that analysis, figuring out a ballpark figure, and then deciding how to get the money.
Yeah, you're right. They are different people, so the idea would be a consultant, a separate consultant that the architect would hire, or we could do our own. So yeah, I can do that. I can just do the architectural piece.
David, you were next, and then Wayne.
I think you're missing Sam. I'm sorry.
Then we'll do David, Lee, and then Sam.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
And I'd like to hear from the public.
Teresa, when you first spoke, you were talking about for some of the branches that you were looking at just minor modifications. I think in some cases, like, for example, the central branch, there might be an opportunity to look at a more comprehensive review of the library, and I'd rather not limit it to simply something that is minor, like to look at what estimates they might give us for maybe a complete redesign or maybe...
Oh, yeah, Central's definitely... Central, Aptos, and Felton would be major.
Okay.
Now, there may be some temporary fixes that they want to say, you know, you can't do this for 7 years, so in 3 years you could get this, you know, you could do this to limp by, but...
Which might include the construction of a new library or just to give an estimate of what that might...
Oh, but I think the new library for downtown, adding on to Aptos and building Felton, and then, of course, with Felton, we would need to decide. I mean, there's already been a lot of work done, so you know, we'd have to figure out where to go with that.
Nate? I just want to say I agree with you, Ellen, in terms of how to structure this and having the physical aspect of it and then the funding aspect be separate. But on the physical aspect of it, I guess kind of getting to what David was saying, I'd be interested in seeing kind of a scalable range of options. I mean, I know using Central as an example, yes, it would be great and ideal to totally build a new building from scratch, but, you know, I would also like to see an option for what if we needed to retrofit the current building.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I know you were saying there were things that, you know, we could limp along for certain amounts of time, but I guess a range of options
right.
for each building. So I just want to make sure that would be in there for each of the facilities.
Sam?
Well, I mean, after maybe we open it up to the public.
Okay.
I don't have any particular questions about the proposal,
okay.
but I do have comments.
Okay.
I did have just a couple things. I would like to see it be a green approach by this, whoever the firm is. So, for instance, looking at Central, I mean, I think about the Sentinel building and what was done by Ecology Action there for an existing building. What can we do in terms of making it the greenest sort of approach possible? And then would this firm actually go in and take a look at structural problems in our existing branches that the system that are owned by the system? For instance, Aptos, they'll go in and look at it in terms of earthquake standards and all that and come out with that as part of the report?
I don't know how detailed they'll be able to get on the funds that we have available. I don't see us as doing this as specifically as like an earthquake evaluation of each building, but as they look towards what are the needs for Aptos. Well, Aptos is too small. That's an easy one. It's too small. Right. So if it were to be bigger, what are the options? Can we add on? Now, to add on, they're going to have to look at a certain degree of structuralness for can it be added on to. But I don't know that the intent would be to go in and analyze what's there now for structural integrity per se, because that's a different thing we're asking them to do rather than we're trying to, what are the needs for Aptos? The need is for Aptos to be bigger. So some structural stuff would happen because of that.
Yeah, it seems really open-ended that way. I remember reading Berkeley had a study done right before they passed
right.
their bond, and it was actually based on getting the bond passed. And so, I remember in it there was a lot of information about structural stuff for existing buildings. And so I would hate to have us do this and then end up having to do yet another study to.
Oh, there's going to have to be more studies. I mean, we're trying to analyze 10 buildings on $100,000. We can't get into a great amount of engineering detail. We just can't. It's going to be a fairly high level that the options for Aptos are you can either add on because, yes, it can structurally be added on to, and, yes, they'll have to look at some building things for that,
mm-hmm.
or you can build new. And here's what it would cost to do this, and here's what it would cost to do that. But then when it came down to, okay, if we want to do Aptos, there's going to need to be some real serious engineering and design studies
yeah.
that go into it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of in twixt in between here, and having to do this for 10 facilities is, and some of the facilities are going to require more in-depth than others. Certainly downtown and Aptos are probably going to take more felt when we have to talk. If you're pleased with what you have, then you know, they maybe just review that and see if that's, you know, how much more needs to be done. That's why it's going to vary by each branch what has to be done for it. So it's hard for me to define what they're going to do. They need to tell me what they need to do in order to make an evaluation, because I don't know.
Any more questions before I take public comment? All right, let's open it up. I see Teal here, so nothing to say on this?
Well, actually, the only thing I would say on this is to kind of answer what Nancy was asking and Teresa was talking about. You know, for the structural engineering of an existing building, you know, the building code is a new building code every 3 years, and typically it incorporates new, you know, what people have learned, especially every time there's been a big earthquake, say like the, what was it, 92, the Northridge quake, something like that. And the code changes. I mean, you know, because the engineers have studied them, they've got seismic devices to, you know, on all these buildings, and they learn, and it takes a few years, but it gets folded into the building code, so it gets ever more complex, basically, as time goes on. When you have an existing building, say like Aptos was about, what, 70-something, right? Where's my And you, when you do some work on that building, as long as you don't increase the load by more than 5%, you can use the code that it was built by. Okay? So you can leave it alone. If you go over that, then you have to make the building conform to the current codes, and you have problems. Because there's no way with the current code that the connections between, especially the connections, say like downtown where it's a concrete building with steel in there and whatnot, the connections just don't measure up because they've learned that the way they did it back then just wasn't, you know, I'm not going to say people are getting smarter, but we're accumulating knowledge, which is kind of a library thing, right? And so you're not going to be able to, when I'm working my way around through here, you're going to have trouble finding, an engineer's going to have trouble looking at a given building and giving you, say, is this safe or that safe? They just can't do that. It's either up or down, typically. And it's usually going to be down. If you're looking in terms of evaluating a building in terms of current code, it's not safe. Central is not safe. But if you evaluate it in terms of the code that it was built under, it was safe because it was built well then. And you know, where's the judgment? And no structural engineer with his or her head screwed on is going to can say if it doesn't meet the current code. So there you go. That's an oxymoron. I don't know if that's an oxymoron, but it's in there. So you can almost pull, you don't worry about putting it in your RFP.
Thanks, Dale. Yeah. Any other,
Bill? Well, on that, so if Aptos needed to be expanded more than 5%, and I realize you said below, so it's not quite the same as expansion, then that would mean, as you say, the new codes. Now, would a master plan like this then take into account when they're saying the cost that this
right.
would now need to meet new codes and it would cost a lot more?
But an expansion, if you separate it enough so that they react as two separate buildings and they don't bang into each other, then you don't run into that 5%. It's really messy. It's not something that's you're gonna be able to resolve very well in a master plan.
Thank you. Any other comments or inputs? All right.
My question,
Catherine,
what
do
you
need
from us tonight?
You've given me some direction in terms of separating basically two RFPs. So
oh,
we would
okay.
do the phase. We would do the
so
facilities piece first, and then when that's done, we would look at the finance piece.
You don't need a motion.
And I don't really need a motion if you just want to let me know that you're okay with this basic approach.
I think Sam, he had comments.
Okay.
Yeah, we're not
Sam,
going to have.
And then back to David and then Jim.
Yeah, we're not going to have action on this at a roll call vote. And I just want to express, I just don't think the timing is right for spending $100,000. There's a lot of unknowns about the state of our budget. We're in the midst of negotiations. We're going through a transition plan. We're going to propose a new model that. Has some many uncertainties about it, and I just feel uncomfortable saying, let's spend $100,000 on a consultant. And then for projects that may not be funded, and we may not have the money to do them. So I just wanted to express that, and it sounds like there's gonna be no vote here, so I won't be able to cast a no vote, but I do have those concerns, and if there were a vote, I think I would not vote to go out on this expenditure at this time. So those are my comments. Thank you.
Sam.
We can
make that a motion.
We can turn anything into an action. We're in charge.
Well, if that's a possibility. I'll make a motion that we table this item then, at least for 3 months.
I'll second that.
If I could, under that motion, I want to just add to that, and I agree. I think the timing, 3 months, 6 months, we're just going to have a better picture with our finances. So I don't see any downside in waiting. I mean, am I missing something?
It takes time. I mean, putting the RFP together and doing all that is going to take me a couple of months. So we're not even looking at getting somebody doing this until after early in 2012. So, it's really, and then it takes about 6 months to do it. So if we're going to expend the money that was budgeted in this fiscal year, we need to get started on it. There are certain aspects of the service model moving forward into future years that was dependent on doing this study. There was money budgeted in future years of the in the projections for making changes to promote single point of service, making some physical changes to promote self-check and single point of service, and been reluctant to plan any of those until we have kind of a bigger picture and a bigger plan in mind of where we're going, because we will have some money in the next couple of years to do some small projects. I mean, I was given a plan for how we might be able to accomplish that in Felton. Now it's only $6,000, but I don't want to spend that or try to find money for that if we're part of a bigger plan. So it's really a matter of trying to get a plan underway that's long term. This is kind of looking to the future, but if you don't want to do it, then it's one less thing for me to have to do.
David?
Just comment, I heard Sam loud and clear on that, and And I think it's important that we look at this from a financial standpoint, but also from an operational standpoint. I think, you know, that some of the facilities have aged and the uses have changed. So we need to, at some point, look at what type of new facilities are needed. I think it was about 15 years ago, the city of San Jose, or was it the state university system, San Jose State, and the Santa Clara Library System, they partnered up and built a new library together looking at mixed uses. And I was wondering if, when we do revisit this, whether or not as part of the master plan, we look at some maybe mixed uses so that we're looking at perhaps, you know, for a footprint of a library, there might be alternatives that we could look at to reduce the cost and yet still have a new library constructed. Some places have classrooms, they're like digital classrooms, and I could see having, let's say it's central, an opportunity for Cabrillo maybe to partner with the library system to have some type of facility there for their use, perhaps, you know, other educational institutions that might offset the cost to do some of this work, or an Aptos, they could have some type of improvement to at least expand the partnership. I know staff at UCSC has talked about having a point of contact down in the city, and that would be a nice opportunity if we can look at this as a plan that's done and maybe in partnership with other areas as well.
I guess I feel like we ought to move forward on this largely because, as Teresa mentioned, we're talking about trying to do self-check and, you know, automated materials handling and all that stuff, and we really can't move forward on that until we have an analysis of the various buildings. But that also made me start to think that if we do move forward, if the vote we're going to take on Sam's motion doesn't pass, I would want the RFP to come back to the board before we put it out, because it just seems like there's a lot of squishiness about what it's really going to entail.
Any other comments, Jim?
So the first thought I had when we were going through this was that there are two different things in here, as Ellen has identified. There are architectural needs, and then there's a question of how we're going to fund it. And I guess the third thing that comes up to me, which I would argue is the most important of the three, would be some survey research, because the only way we're going to be able to undertake what we need at Central, a Felton Library, improving Aptos, it would seem to me, is going to be a bond at some point. And I don't think any of us think that we're in a climate right now where a bond could pass. I don't think any of us think we could get a bond on the ballot next year in November. And if we're not going to have a bond on in the near term, while we know that we have needs at all of these branches that need to be studied and we need to get answers about what our options are for those branches, it seems to me we should do this at a time when we think we've got a chance that we're going to be able to get the community to give us the money that we need to enact these improvements. Otherwise, we're going to have a situation where we could spend $100,000 for what improvements we're going to need. We could have no realistic way to enact a lot of these improvements now because the climate's not going to be right for a bond. And then we might have to wait a couple of years, and we've got $100,000 that we just sunk in a study that's going to be largely useless by the time there's a climate when we can go to the electorate for a bond. So my first thought would be that we should wait until, unless I'm missing something and we have some options for funding some of these improvements that aren't going to require approval of two-thirds of the county's voters, then I would think we should wait until we see a potential bond on the horizon. I don't see that right now. The only thing I would add to that is, if we, and this is going to contradict a little bit about what I just said, but if we do see an opportunity for some relatively modest, good bang for the buck improvements, you know, Central is the one that screams out for help. You know, it's 40 years old. It has the vast majority of the use that we get compared to other branches. If there's something that we can do there that's relatively quick, doesn't require going to the people, then maybe we should initiate an assessment of that as part of an effort to actually get something done. In other words, this would be the first step, and then it would lead directly to, here's how you secure the financing, here's when it gets built, and we've got a timeline on when something's going to get done. If it's just a question of studying you know, at some point in the future we want to do a lot of these things, then I think the time to do that is when we think we can get the public to support us.
Teresa, you had a response.
The quandary here is, I don't know how much money we need. So if you start thinking about, the first question you get asked, if you're thinking about a bond, even if that bond is 2 or 3 or 4 years away, is how much money? I don't know if we're looking at 10 million or 50 million. And that's why we need, and that's why we decided when we put the service model together and had the facilities master plan in there, because we need the information, we need to know what's the scale we're looking at, and we won't be able to structure a bond until we do something like this, because we wouldn't know what we're asking for various locations. So it's kind of like, which comes first, the chicken or the egg, and that's kind of the problem here. And if there are some small things that we can do, and we did put some money in ensuing, not this fiscal year, but I think starting next fiscal year, to make some small improvements, so that we could move towards the single point of service and subject properly, not just jerry-rigging like we're doing now, we're going to have to get someone in to help us with those and that analysis anyway. So it seemed like this was the way to get the plan so we kind of know what our needs are and where we're moving, what we need to be going for. That was the rationale behind having it. So.
Lee, you have a comment?
We did vote to include this chunk of money in this year's budget. We could have put it off, a couple of years. And yes, it is a lot of money, especially given all of the changes that the system is going through and the layoffs and everything. I understand that. But to what you were saying, I don't think we want to take a piecemeal approach to this planning. I mean, if we're going to do it, I think we need to do it in a comprehensive way. So, whether that's this year we look at it or next year, I think it does need to be done, but I'm not in favor of sort of just picking up little bits of it. Because we voted to have a 10-branch system, and the branches need work, and so I think we're going to have to invest some money into looking at what needs to be done now or a bit sooner or later.
Okay. My opinion is I am not supportive of delaying this. For many of the reasons that have already been discussed. As Lee said, we've sort of gone through almost three different layers of saying we need to have this facilities master plan, the latest, of course, being we put it in the budget just a few months ago. And I don't see that our environment has changed since then. If our environment had changed significantly, then I might say, yes, let's step back and rethink this. But I don't see that the environment has changed. Those of us on the task force thought this through, and I think that every model that came out of that task force had a facilities master plan in it, if I'm recalling correctly, because we also, I believe, the service model that we ended up approving, the compromise model, had it in there, because it also has some capital reserves starting, I don't remember when, how many years out into the future, but starting to put money aside for some of our capital programs. And until we do see the big picture, I don't know how we begin to do any of that. And I think that one of our big weaknesses that we've had in the past around capital is that we've piecemealed it. Everything we do, whether it's $10,000 or $300,000, we really just think of that one thing, and does this work for this one facility? And yes, it does, and okay, we've got the money, so let's spend it. But I really think that's not a good way to approach our decision-making on facility needs. And I really feel the need for context when I'm making a decision on the board about any specific capital project, and this would certainly provide a roadmap for us. So that's my opinion. Sam?
Yeah, maybe just a final word. I just wanted to speak on the budgeting question. Yes, this was put into the budget, but there were a lot of other assumptions that we put into the budget that have not yet borne out, and we don't know the results of those. And so to go ahead with what I feel is a discretionary item in advance of those other items that are still in play, it just, to me, that's why I'm saying I don't think the timing seems right. All those things also affect the number of hours that these facilities are open. I don't know how you do a study and determine what their construction, design, layout, rehabilitation should be until you know how many hours they're going to be open, and until you know then how many staff and people are going to be working in those facilities. And those things have not been firmed up or confirmed, and so I don't see how you go proceed with a comprehensive master plan and study without making a lot of assumptions about those other aspects, which in my view haven't been determined yet. And that was just my point. I just think the timing is not right, and so.
Catherine.
I will be supporting Sam's motion, but I want to be clear. I don't disagree that we need a plan, absolutely. Not disagreeing at all. To me, it's the timing. And the part that Jim raised, I think, is absolutely true. We are not going to the voters in 12, whether we do 14 or 50, the plan will be out of date. So we have to get the consultant back to update it. So I'm not saying put it off forever, but I just think this is not the time. I think we'll be so much smarter in the spring, even, where we are with how the whole new system is working out. So just to be sure, I like the idea of a plan. It's just a time.
Thank you. Any other comments?
So I had a question. So if we did put it off till the spring, does that mean that you would then issue an RFP? And
it would be next fiscal year that it would be.
Right.
Because if we issued the RFP in the spring, mm-hmm. we would cross fiscal years, because my understanding is it takes probably 4 to 6 months to do the study.
Mm-hmm.
Fine.
So can we have a motion?
Well, the motion, as I wrote it down, was to table this item for 3 months. Is that the motion that you made?
Yes, it is.
Okay. And did we have a second on that?
Yes, we did.
Yeah, Catherine. Okay. So the motion is to table a decision on moving ahead with the RFP for 3 months, which would make it December. David?
For clarification, is there any chance that the development of an RFP can be created, or is that part of what you're looking at spending? Can something be done in-house?
I would write the RFP.
So is that something that's dependent on authorizing the expenditure at this time, so that if when we come back in 2 months, at least there would be something to consider at that time?
So what you're saying is you don't want to issue the RFP until at the earliest December?
Revisit it.
You want me to write it and then say you don't want to issue it at all? Is hate to say it, but kind of a waste of my time, because it's going to take a lot of work to do this, many hours. So if we're not, if you want to write it, but you want to delay issuing it, we can do that. But if there's a chance that you don't want to issue it at all, it's not a really good use of resources.
Yeah, I mean, I think the motion tabling the item for 3 months, the item would be basically what we're discussing today. This the same content basically as today, with Teresa asking for our direction.
So I would come back to you in December and ask for direction.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
So how many?
Do we need a roll call?
No, yeah. I think three no's. Do you have
four
that?
Four no's, I think.
Who was for
Nancy? Did you vote?
No, I'm voting to delay it for 3 months.
So
David, which way
do you
go?
Let's do a roll call.
Supervisor Peary?
No.
Citizen Gert?
Yes.
Citizen Gorson?
No.
Council Member Byers?
Yes.
Citizen Portinger?
No.
Councilmember Reed?
Yes.
Councilmember Terrazas?
No.
Supervisor Stone?
Yes.
Councilmember Story?
Yes.
All right.
One last thing on my to-do list.
Step 5, 4, 6, 3.
is transition update.
We issued the draft report in August. We are currently in meet and confer with the various bargaining units on the impacts of the draft report. The intention is to come back to the board with the final report at the October board meeting. There's a lot of moving pieces right now as a result of the discussions with the bargaining units. We're having very good discussions with them. We're all working. We know how difficult the time this is for everyone, but we are we're really working it through and doing our best to implement the service model as decided by the board and last week.
Questions? Okay. Performance. We can. It's on, yeah. It's on staff reports. Any public input? Okay. Thank you, Catherine. Performance indicators.
At the last meeting, you asked me to come back with performance indicators that we could use to evaluate the success of your service model. And this was a very difficult exercise. I worked very closely with my management team. We had many iterations and many discussions. There's just no way to, you know, no right or wrong way to approach this. And so I'm presenting one to you. And there's a lot of other indicators that we'll probably be collecting and things that we'll use to inform analysis of how the plan is progressing, but the board was going to agree on some that you wanted to look at periodically on a regular basis. That time will vary based on the indicator. It may be relevant for a year, maybe it's a month, depends. There is a relatively short time between implementation of the model and next year's budget, so the indicators themselves are not going to be able to give us real specific enough data, but we're hoping that we'll get enough trends. Some of these are qualitative. We're getting responses from people, how are things working, rather than just numbers. So we tried to combine qualitative and quantitative and kind of effectiveness measures. We identified 7 areas, and those are outlined here, and in each of those, we came up with a number of indicators that we thought, you know, did reflect quantitative, qualitative, and effectiveness. Specifically, there's no numbers in here. So visits per open hour increases 8%. I don't want to get into a discussion of should it be 10% or 8%. We can save that for another meeting. But just conceptually agree that these are good indicators to have. And then once I know what the indicators are, can go back and actually come up with some reasonable percentage numbers that would make sense to, you know, what are our baselines and, you know, what would be a reasonable number for increases, and come back to you in probably November, because it's only 3 weeks to the next board meeting, so it's not really enough time. I don't know if you want to go through them one by one, if you want to ask questions about them, if you've got comments about them, how you want to approach it.
Why don't we see if there's questions, because I think that we've all read it. Any?
I thought for the most part when I looked through these, they made sense. There was one under the volunteers that I didn't exactly understand what it was, which was number of branch operations, critical shifts, mm-hmm. 8 hours per week.
The service model calls for the 6 larger branches, 8 hours per week. Instead of library aides, the work is performed by volunteers. And so the question is, are we getting the volunteers we need to cover those shifts? Because they are mission critical in order to keep the library operating. There.
So you might want to, when we sort of gather that stuff, you might want to figure out whether these are shifts where we haven't been able to get a volunteer, or we have a volunteer and they didn't show up, or, you know, some differentiation mm-hmm. there.
Sure.
So we know if the problem is in recruitment or
sure.
is in what.
That makes sense, sure.
And then the average number of volunteer hours by age group. Might be interesting, I guess, but I'm not sure it's very important.
We put that in there because one of the concerns is that the going back to those mission operation critical shifts, staff's very concerned that we're not going to be able to find volunteers physically able to do the kind of, it's very physical work. And so we thought it would be...
You're going to get in a lot of trouble if you keep going.
We want to do this by age.
You might want to stop there. About to get off my chair.
Yeah. I mean, if what you're saying is we'll be able to tell by a person's age whether they're able to do that work, I think that's... No, we're not saying that at all. There's going to have to be a physical... staff has to pass a physical in order to do certain jobs, and we may have to do that for the volunteers as well. I will stop there. we thought it would be interesting though to see where
it would
the
be interesting
where the volunteers are coming from.
I think it would be interesting. I'm not sure it's a performance indicator, so that's why I was curious about why it was in there. But yeah, you need something in there about trying to get at that issue that you're getting at in some way other than age.
You know, in thinking about it, you and your staff may well be collecting a lot of data like this that isn't in these particular indicators. Because to me, what if you step back and say, okay, what are we trying to find out so that we know what we need to adjust if needed? It's not really the age. It really is the fact that they show up, number one, and that the work gets done, number two. So I don't know what the indicator would be on assessing does the work get done, but maybe that's where an indicator can come from, if there is one. And if there isn't one that can easily be tracked, I agree with Alan. Let's just take this one out because there's... I think these other volunteer indicators would give us.
We had another reason for it. I can't remember what it is right now. I know we did. Anybody remember?
I think we talked about this in the past about in terms of whether or not you also would get recruited staff to meet the hour requirements to have enough volunteers to fill in. I don't know about the age, but that was separate. But the idea of having enough volunteers that were able to fill shifts that were assigned, that was one reason why you'd have a listing for volunteers, because if you didn't have anyone to be there, that you couldn't meet the requirements for staffing for certain hours.
The work getting done is actually under quality of services, returned item shelf within 24 hours, 90% of the time, because that is currently what we're doing. And so if it falls below that, one of the reasons would be is we don't have the staff available, staff or volunteers available to do it. You couldn't staff or volunteer in that situation. So we had another reason for that one, and I just remember mine. Do you remember, Richard?
I thought it was to indicate how the recruitment was going, whether we were recruiting from a broad spectrum of population.
That might have been it. I knew there was something else.
I think that's where we were going with that.
Emily Jens, you don't remember? you remember us talking about it. You remember it that way? Okay.
I think we also wanted to know which groups to go after for volunteers.
But that's one that we can keep on our own in terms of not necessarily performance of the data. Okay.
Are there questions or comments on this?
I just wanted to understand. It would also be good to include the staff turnover rate as an indicator.
What was that?
Okay.
The staff turnover rate.
Probably easy enough to get out of the HR system.
Zero. But yeah, it's easy enough to do. Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions, comments? Do you have what you need?
I'm asking if you approve these indicators with knowing that I'll come back in November and numbers fill in.
Move approval with the changes we discussed.
Second.
We have Ellen made the motion and Sam seconded it to move approval with the change on the age group and staff turnover. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. All right, moving on to other business. We have nothing to review on parking lot. And so we have the item that was moved from the consent agenda, the approval of hours. Teresa, what page? Do you know what page?
20 and 21. Thank you. Last spring, when we figured out how many hours, you then said to me, go figure out which configuration. And this actually came from each of the branches. I asked them to tell me what, you know, what they thought, and we worked on this for a couple of months. We actually didn't have a couple of months. We didn't have that long, because in order to start the whole planning for when how FTEs converted to individuals, we had to know the hours, specific hours, so that it impacted staffing. So we talked about it and then realized we only had a couple of weeks to firm it up. So based on what staff told us, and we tried to take a system approach and trying to keep something every day in each region. There's a library open in each region every day. We tried to try for some manner of consistency. I don't know how well we did that. We tried to do as best we could, particularly within a branch. So if you always have two, is it five, is it one, you know, that kind of thing. And this is the configuration we came up with. So I present it for your approval.
So Nancy, you asked it to be removed. So what were your questions or concerns?
I had, first of all, when I really looked at this, the hours that you came up with, I noticed that pretty much across the board, except for the smaller branches, the hours that the current hours were expanded from what they are now, and they were added to. For instance, if Scotts Valley was closed on a Friday, it's now open on a Friday. I don't have those in front of me. But also, the hours that they're open were expanded so that if someone's already in the habit of going to, say, Central on Tuesday in the morning, it's still going to be open then. So I started looking at the, especially three of the smaller branches, Felton, Garfield Park, and actually Boulder Creek too. But just focusing on Felton and Garfield Park right now, they're only open in the afternoons for 4 hours spread across the week. And I feel like that really limits people who like to use the mornings occasionally, or that they're already in the sort of habit of using the mornings. But the other thing is that Felton is, you know, I think in the last few months, it opened on Saturday. So people are starting to get into the habit of going to it on Saturday. Now it's going to be closed on Saturday and open on Sunday afternoon. I don't know for sure, but I don't think Sunday afternoon is like a really busy time for libraries in general. And so, well, let me say Felton then. There's a program that recently got off the ground in Felton that's several people are volunteering for. People are starting to get used to it, the Read to a Dog program on Saturday morning. A couple people have called me and said, what about some morning hours? So I realize there's only 20 hours to divide up, but can't some of those, a couple mornings, one morning a week at least?
They certainly can.
Great.
This just came back from the staff. This was their recommendation based on people's current patterns and how what they were hearing. But you want one or two mornings, 10 to 2,
two mornings certainly can do that.
I'd almost like to ask the public, do a little bit more, reach out to the public, because, I don't know, 4 hours a day, would the public rather it be open 6 hours a day and then only open 4 days a week?
In terms of getting the staffing plan done, we just didn't have time to do that. And then it's, you know, who are you hearing from and is it a majority? I mean, so in terms of, as soon as you get into a six-hour day, you're starting to deal with lunch hours. And so we're trying to stay away from that, particularly in the smaller branches, because you're just having two people there, one of them being a library aide. So you don't want that person there alone. So we didn't want to get into lunch hours. So we specifically didn't want six-hour days, because having to give meal breaks becomes a problem. There's the four-hour days we don't run into that kind of problem. So, but if you would, and the reason we did Sunday was basically to try to have something in the valley, in the valley and Scotts Valley open on Sunday, and so. The recommendation was for it to be felt, and if we don't care that there's nothing open on Sunday in this area, we can move it back to Saturday. It would be schedules are Tuesday through Saturday or Sunday through Thursday if it's a 5-day-a-week operation, because that's how the staffing, mm-hmm. that makes it work in terms of staffing. Otherwise, we start having problems with people getting 2 days off in a row and stuff. So that was, there's certain givens that we have to have based in order to make the staffing model work.
Any other comments from the board? Public?
Okay. I just want to support what Nancy mentioned, the dog program and the fact that Saturday is starting to be utilized more in Felton. I think Sunday afternoons families are out and about, not doing errands, but doing other things. So I don't see Sunday afternoon being a great open time.
The dog program can still happen on Saturday morning. I mean, I mentioned the programming can still happen when the library is closed, because we actually, it's better. In fact, Capitola is doing the dog program while they're closed now, which is much better in your kind of, particularly a facility like Felton, in order to have a little bit of privacy and not having people, a lot of movement around the kids and the dogs. It'd actually be better to have it when you're not open.
So you would have staff there to open the building and volunteers there?
Volunteers. Do it, or the programming staff, because programming is coming from a centralized location, so no, it wouldn't be the Felton staff itself, but it would be the programming staff that would cover it.
Oh.
So, from a programming point of view, there's no problem. Mm-hmm. I did mention that story times don't have to be when the library is open. That's not an issue now, because it's being provided by different staff.
Well, that's good to know, so that if it expands to a second day or, you know, another dog, say, then it could be held on a morning by a staff member coming.
Yeah. But if you really, Lewin, this was 3 months ago now, so I can't remember all the rationale from all the different branches or 4 months ago, but if you want a morning or two mornings, and you want to switch back to Saturday, it really doesn't matter. It's fine. From a staffing perspective, as long as we stay to the 4 hours a day, 5 days, it doesn't matter. It's just a matter of...
My other question is, the final implementation of the expanded hours then will happen in July, is that correct?
That's the intention.
It's coming. I have a question on what you just said, which is, that would mean that there would not be any library open on Sunday. And Scotts Valley is not open, Boulder Creek's not open, Felton would not be open if you make those changes. So just,
and they're not
understand.
Now, so I mean, you know.
I know they're not now. I understand that. I'm just saying that's...
Yeah,
that's
but that was the rationale for doing it, was just to have one open everywhere.
Yes.
Lee.
Well, I move approval of this as is, with the exception of figuring out with Felton moving it, you know, whether it's the Sunday through Thursday or the Tuesday through Saturday. Move approval of the
Alan seconded it already.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So Helga Lee was the motion and Alan was the second. Thank you.
I just want to understand. So what we're setting aside, Felton, to do more homework.
Yeah,
you're
good.
Yeah. Very good. I support.
5 days, 4 hours a day. We just do
the
ones
they
are.
Yeah.
Ready.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
If I could, the one the motion. This goes in effect. Did I hear you just say July?
January. No, these are
January.
These
oh,
hours are January.
Nancy, we'll go just at this point we'll do a survey with Tuesday through Saturday.
Oh, right.
Great.
Tuesday,
okay. That would be good.
Yeah.
Okay.
So
the global scale is too much.
Next regularly scheduled meeting is Monday, October 3rd. And with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.
It's on order.